morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We don't often do this, but man, what a great baseball situation we got going now.
Back-to-back awesome games last night.
Seriously, an unreal ending in the MLB playoffs last night. We got LeBron getting ready for his Los Angeles Laker debut this evening. So we got a lot to get to. Lakers taking on the Blazers in Portland. And new teammates, new expectations for LeBron as he seeks to go to the finals for the ninth straight season. Nick Wright, how should success for LeBron and the Lakers be defined this season?
All right, let me give some very specific things that you'll be able to check back in at the end of the year, and then we can talk about maybe more almost ideas for them. But specifically, they've got to get at least 50 wins, be one of the top four seeds in the West, which is going to be tough, because if Golden State and Houston are 1-2, Utah, the Lakers, and Oklahoma City are going to be, one of them is not going to be a top four seed. But to be one of those top four seeds and to advance as far in the playoffs as you can until you play Golden State. So that means that's why you extra incentive to be the three seed, avoid Golden State potentially until the conference finals. But those are three realistic, achievable, tangible goals. 50 wins, top four seed in the West, and not lose to anyone in the playoffs other than Golden State. Those are all benchmarks that you can grab onto that, to me, would define a successful season for the Lakers.
Yeah, I think 50 wins is a good number as far as where they were last year. If you look at the plus-minus, what LeBron typically has done when he's joined other teams, when he went from the Cavs the first time to Miami, when he left Miami and joined the Cavs, I'm excited to see what he can do. I think it's very, very important. You watch games and you start season, people say, what's important? We'll get off to a fast start. It's not a bailout as far as saying that, that's what everyone's going to say. But when you're playing with a bunch of young players, it's important that they have success. And I've seen LeBron in this exchange of going from one team to another, the team struggle more likely than they get off to a fast start. That's what they did in Miami. That's what they did in Cleveland. So I hope that these young players, that they look at it a little bit different. And with the schedule and being out West, that's going to be hard to do. So I would like to see them get off to a fast start. Last year, we saw Boston. Boston did lose the first couple games. But then after that, man, with those young players, man, they ran off a bunch of games. And I think that helped develop the confidence of those young players.
You guys call it struggling, getting off to, trying to overcome what LeBron did in Miami and Cleveland. But isn't there something to these guys trying to figure out how to play in a competitive setting, figure out timing and pacing and how to all play together? Isn't that a sort of normal? Because he ended up winning in Miami and winning in Cleveland after those starts.
I think this is a drastically different situation, however, than each of those previous two. In Miami, it was about three great players who had always been the best guy on every team they'd been on, learning to play together.
Yes.
And the first month of the season, it was LeBron would take a turn, D-Wade would take a turn. Really, that whole first year, that's almost what they did. In Cleveland, it was a team that had never won anything, that had no momentum going in its favor, had just gotten the number one pick of the draft, them learning to win it all. With the Lakers, it's a team that, absent of LeBron, had been on plus nine wins, a positive trajectory, and a team that doesn't have a ball dominant, I don't want to say selfish in a negative way about Kyrie, but a guy who's used to having everything run through him the way Kyrie was. I actually think it'll be an easier transition for LeBron with the Lakers than it was in Miami or in Cleveland, even if right now their ceiling is not as high as what it was for those two teams.
So Luke Walton, the head coach, has said he does want to limit LeBron's minutes a little bit, that this is a long journey, not a one-year journey. What do you guys think about that?
It's an organizational thought. It's like the whole organization is thinking about this. Because when you get LeBron at this stage, it's not like any other stage. So you can't use his beginning stint in Cleveland, his stint in Miami, or him going back to Cleveland. No, because in all those, man, he was one of the leaders in minutes. No, LeBron's at a different stage. He's also with the youngest team. And you should be able to rely and put some of those minutes on the back of these younger players. You can't expect LeBron to be able to push the types of minutes and play the type. He played 82 games last year. Why would he play 82 games? Would it be in the best interest of the Lakers? Because the truth of the matter is, they're going to need LeBron healthy in year 3 and 4 because their chance of winning a championship probably will be greater then than they will be in year one and two.
I think it's smart to try to limit his minutes. I think that's going to be Luke Walton's toughest job, is telling LeBron to come out of a game if he doesn't want to. I don't know how important it is. It's been important for every player in NBA history. But in year 14, LeBron led the NBA in minutes per game and then played in more playoff games than anybody and went 33-9-8 in the playoffs in 41 minutes per game. Last year, he led the league in minutes and then played more games than anybody and then played more playoff games than anybody, played 42 minutes a game in those playoffs, and went 34-9-9. So in year 16, can he do something similar? Probably. Will that negatively affect year 18 and 19, which is C's point? That's the math Luke Walton has to do. And that gets to when I said there's intangible things to discuss as well. That's one of the most important things to figure out by the end of this year. Is Luke Walton a high-level NBA coach? I'm not saying he is or he isn't, but I don't think we have any way to know yet. You can throw out what happened in Golden State when he was an interim coach there. That team was almost on autopilot.
I don't believe you can throw it out because, as you say, everywhere I've ever been led me to being right here. Every decision I ever made.
Oh, sure.
And just his whole basketball experience, that means growing up in a basketball family, his college experience, being a champion, all those things. So for me, I'm not going to exclude everything. I'm still at the same conclusion as you. I don't know if he is the right coach. But I'm not going to take away parts that I believe can be important. We tried to do that with Steve Kerr. Everyone needs a coach. Secretariat needs a jockey, a harness, a bridle. Everyone needs a coach. So that coach becomes very important. Who he is as a coach, now that we will see.
All I meant, and I'm glad you clarified there, is not that you throw it out meaning he didn't learn anything, meaning that wasn't an important experience for him. I just mean when you look at his overall coaching win-loss record, it is greatly inflated by those 40 games he coached when Steve Kerr was injured.
I'm not going to give him credit for the wins.
Right, that's what I meant.
But the intel and being around great players, being in pressurized situations, LeBron, he has coached players like LeBron.
Right.
Why? Because he was there in Golden State.
Yep.
So that experience becomes critical.
When you talk about Luke Walton and the minutes, is there a correlation, and I don't know this, but is there a correlation between the minutes he plays and the pace with which they're going to play? We talked about how slow Cleveland played last year, but maybe that affects it?
All minutes are not created equal. It is a great question and a great point. It's easier for LeBron to lead the league in minutes if his team is playing at a snail's pace as it has in the last few years, or at least not a fast pace. It's much more difficult if you're running up and down the court.
It is much more difficult that way. And as Nick said, that was a tremendous question. What if LeBron, as we talked about before, if they play Kuzman at the five and LeBron at the four? So if he plays those extended minutes and he's playing against bigger people, that could take more of a wear and tear, just like up and down the court. So all the minutes aren't the same, and we need to watch the style they're going to play and what position does LeBron play on the court.
One last note. The Lakers last year won 35 games. 54 times they had fourth quarter leads. They lost more games that they led in the fourth quarter last year than any team in the league except for Dallas. They now have the best closer in basketball. That and that alone is going to jump their win total at least 10 because they won't be giving away games late the way they did last year.
All right, let's take a break. Get back to some football on the other side. Moving on to the defending Super Bowl champs. They broke a two-game losing streak by trouncing the Giants on Thursday Night Football. This week, they will face a Carolina Panther team in what could be a playoff preview. Cam Newton trying to get his team back on track after losing to Washington last week. Carson Wentz trying to keep his team on track after their win last week.
We're hungry. That's a locker room of hungry guys. And so when guys make mistakes, they're not happy about it. They're not guys that hang their heads. We're guys that are looking forward to improve off of that mistake and learn from it. So I think really coach, all the coaches, and then the leaders on this team did a great job last week on a short week for just reminding everybody who we are and just playing fast, playing our football. Yeah, I mean, anytime you can play a game like that against an NFC East opponent like that on the road, you know, on Thursday night football, of that, you know, gives you confidence. You know, every time we go out there and we put up a performance like that, you know, we're just one step closer to being who we are and knowing who we are. And so, yeah, it definitely gives us confidence going forward.
All right, Stink, the Giants weren't exactly the fiercest, toughest opponent, but the Eagles did beat them. How close are they now when you look at this Philadelphia team to resembling the team we saw march through and win last year?
Well, I think they're growing closer to that. Still some defensive struggles that they have had. You know, Saquon Barkley ran through them, caught the ball underneath, made big plays in the passing game. But I think offensively, the thing to me that is setting them apart or will set them apart is Carson Wentz coming off the knee injury and him continuing to develop, him continuing to get confidence. Anytime you come off an injury like that, it takes you a bunch of games. It takes you 5, 6, 7 games to all of a sudden be like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about my knee in practice. I didn't even think about the recovery. I didn't even think about that in the game. And so it gets you to the point where you start to develop more and more and more confidence. And when you do that, you're going to play faster and faster. And so I think that's offensively where they are. When they get that rhythm back with their quarterback, they start running the ball a little bit more because they do have a tendency to get away from it. I think then we'll see this team continue to progress and get to back to kind of their Super Bowl form.
Yeah, I think there was a trap that they had to fall into because, for one, whoever they were going to be this year, regardless of how well they play, they couldn't be the team from last year because the quarterback wasn't there. And, Stink, you know this. When we start a season over now in the NFL, more so even than when we play, you got 30-35% new faces.
Yeah.
So you're saying, okay, you know, I want this team to play like last year's team with 30-40% new personnel, including the most important one, the quarterback. Like, it's not a goal that's obtainable. So, like, we shouldn't be talking about Carson Wentz. What I like here in the press conference, he skipped over that. He said, we got back to the identity for which we know. That's playing fast, because there are certain traits or characteristics that teams want to be able to play to. And I think that's what's more important to Philadelphia, being a physical football team, offense and defense up front, not giving up big plays on the back end. These are the type of characteristics, mixing the run with the pass, moving the quarterback out of the pocket. These are the characteristics to playing good football, not to last year's Super Bowl. So for me, we got to stop, and they got to stop trying to get back to something that's not obtainable because we don't have the same guys. So now I'd be asking these guys to play like the guys that I had last year.
Agreed, except for this point. They do have the same offensive line. They have the same defensive line with some additions.
No, they don't.
What do you mean?
Jason Peters. He's starting, yeah, right?
But he was there for the bulk of their run last year.
No. Let's go to the last two games of the regular season, the two games in the playoffs, sure, and the Super Bowl. That's a 5-game. That's the team that won the Super Bowl. Would you guys agree? It's not the team that started in September.
Agreed.
It was that team that took the field in late December, questionable. That's why you had huge question marks about them. So you can't. That offensive line's not the same. The defensive line's not the same.
So the point that I think you might actually agree with the point I'm trying to make, which is the way they were in position to have home field was the strength of their offensive line, defensive line, and quarterback play. Now those three units, like what we saw against the Giants was how the Eagles were in the position they were in pre-Carson Wentz injury. Against the Giants, they allow one sack after the offensive line not playing well. Against the Giants, their D-line looks ferocious. And I think most importantly, against the Giants, Carson Wentz was better on third down, completed more passes, and had more yards passing on third down against the Giants than he had in the three previous games combined. That, to me, was what their special sauce was last year, prior to the underdogs, prior to the injuries. Like, we got to see how they're going to be in the playoffs once the playoffs start. But to get back there and to potentially have another home game in Philadelphia, it's offensive line, defensive line, and quarterback.
But there's no team. Maybe there's no team that's preparing, saying, I want to do what I did last year. All right? So we as commentators, I'm not going to commentate because I know no team is doing that.
You know what's interesting? Doing a couple of Rams games, they didn't really play at all in the preseason, their offense. And everybody's like, oh, how's this going to affect them? Well, they brought back 10 of 11 starters. So they had continuity from last year. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles started the season without their quarterback. He wasn't full go in practice. So you've got an extension in the first 3 weeks of really you're playing preseason games.
Yes.
As you're trying to get your – but you're in the regular season. So there was going to be a learning curve for them. But I'm with you. When they get the offensive line, defensive line, that they're built from the inside out.
It's not – to me, it's not about how did we win last year. It's about what is the strength of our team. Like, let's say last year never happened. We would look at the Eagles and say the strength of their team should be their big people and their quarterback. That's the point I'm
making. And that's what they should be talking about. And that's what we should be talking about, because what happened last year, it does not help Carson Wentz. It does not help Jason Peters. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they weren't there. They were just like me, not there.
We actually were there.
Stick around. Be here when we come back. Coming up, can the Cowboys keep their momentum going against Washington? That's next on First Things First. Coming up Saturday, number 6, Michigan takes on in-state rival number 24, Michigan State. Then Pac-12 contenders collide as Colorado takes on 15th-ranked Washington. It all kicks off Saturday, 11:30 Eastern on Fox.
Coach Izzo, give me a call, man, if you need me to come to Michigan State to give them a little pep talk, bro. Coach Harbaugh, give me a call if you need me to get the Wolverines ready. Got to stay with one loss till they take on those Buckeyes late in the year.
Lupe, give me a call. We'll chat.
Lupe? Oh, Coach Harbaugh, or Coach Izzo's wife.
Coach Izzo's wife.
Yeah, there you go. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you for me. Back here with Mark Schlereth, we are going viral. Jon Gruden is just 6 games into his 10-year, $100 million contract. But with the Raiders off to a 1-5 start, Oakland fans are already wondering when the head coach will get axed. Launching this is GrudenGoneYet.com website that tracks if he has been fired. So how much time is left on his contract? How much money he has made since you visited the site? How much money he has made in total? And how much money is he still owed? For all of those answers, you can go ahead and check.
Quit pocket watching, people. You can criticize Gruden all you want. I do it quite a bit. But leave his money alone. That money ain't your money. So it's Al Davis or Mark Davis.
No, criticize him. Don't listen to Nick Wright. If they give someone a 10-year, $100 million contract, criticize him. Because right now, it looks like one of the worst deals in sports. You remember when they had the heist, when Jerry Jones and them heisted the Vikings over the Herschel Walker thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, this one's worse. This one's bad.
Gruden, give me a call. We'll talk.
Okay.
you guys were having people call.
Yeah.
I felt like I was out of it.
Stink will go out to Oakland, give a... Well, Jenna, you look so confused.
It says Gruden has made 517 since you've arrived.
It's a screenshot of the website. They mean you've been on the website.
No,
as soon as you get there, how much he's made.
He just made $5.
That's tough to swallow. Yeah. I got to get one of those. Back to America's team for Nick. Although a few more losses, and they may have to put that title on hold. It's not necessarily America's team when you just keep losing. Cowboys are coming off a win over Jacksonville. They got Washington this weekend. Dallas has an opportunity to share the division lead if they can pull out a win. Ezekiel Elliott talked to reporters yesterday, highlighting the importance of a little momentum here.
I think it was a game we needed. I said it before, if we don't build on that, then everything we did last weekend, really. You know what I mean? It means nothing.
All right. What do the Cowboys need to do this? I mean, they've gone, win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. They can't seem to get two in a row. But what would they have to do now to get momentum?
I think they've developed a formula, and that formula is we're going to run the ball 35 times. We're going to keep it out of our quarterback's hands. We're going to open up the play-action aspect of our game, make some easy throws. I mean, if we're going to throw it 25 times, we're going to make 11, 12 legitimate completions off the play action for Dak Prescott that are going to be easy one-route reads, and we're going to dominate the line of scrimmage. And I mean, that's the formula right now, not only with Zeke, but also with Dak Prescott designed runs. I think he ran it 11 times, probably 6 or 7 of them were designed runs where he pulled it and kept it. So that, to me, is the formula that they created. That's how they're going to have to win, because they've lacked talent on the edge. They lack talent at the receiver position. So that opens up those guys to get one-on-ones on a consistent basis. I think that's the formula, and that's what they have to adhere to.
We talk about the Cowboys in a different way because of the uniforms they wear, because of who their owner is, and because their quarterback had a great rookie year. We got to talk about the Cowboys the way last year we were talking about the Jaguars. How are they going to win? Heavy dose of Leonard Fournette. Zeke's better than Leonard Fournette, and a great defense. This defense isn't as good as last year's Jags defense.
If they actually were the Jags, we wouldn't be talking about them.
Agreed. Yeah. Right. No, but my point is that's the style of football they have to play.
Absolutely.
They've got some of the best stories in the league this year on the Cowboys defense. Leighton Vander Esch, I thought that was a reach in the first round. I thought they should have taken Calvin Ridley. I thought they should have gone wide receiver. They decided to add because they know Sean Lee's going to miss time. Sean Lee's missing time. Leighton Vander Esch has played well as a rookie. Jalen Smith, a guy who, yesterday, when we were talking about Nicky Bosa, pardon me, sitting out the rest of the year, I couldn't stop but think about Jalen Smith because Jalen Smith was a draft profile similar to Nick Bosa before he got hurt, fell to the second round. Cowboys took a chance on him. Now he looks like that player. DeMarcus Lawrence is earning that franchise tag at $19 million. And Zeke is the best pure runner of the football once again in the NFL. Any plays they get from their quarterback vertically are a bonus right now. You can't bake that into any of the math we're doing about how they're going to beat Washington this weekend.
Why is it so hard for America to wrap their head around the fact that Dallas could be a defensive team with a little offense sprinkled in?
Oh, it's not sexy. Oh, it's so much easier to talk about. Dak and Zeke and, oh, and Dez and Witten and, well, the Dak of 216, he's not there. Now, we know physically Witten and Dez are not there. Ezekiel Elliott is a special, special football player, and they spent so much money on the offensive line. It's not just because it's the Dallas Cowboys. That's just the way the optics on the NFL are. People know more about the offensive players, and they like talking about the offensive players. We're scoring more points, so we should be talking about the offensive players. But what's your formula to winning? Regardless of, man, what is sexy to talk about, man, like, we got some real family business we need to talk about. Like, listen, every family's got a budget. You got to live within that budget, and that's what Dallas should. Their budget's 25 passes. Right. If they go over that, I mean, I started the segment earlier saying, oh, they should spread it out, New England. Let's go five wide. Let's go empty. You're going to throw the ball 50 times, only run it 10 times. We have seen New England just devastate people. After the previous week, they ran the ball 40 times.
Right.
Dallas does not have that. We can't expect them. We can't expect that type of creativity. But they're going to have to add on to the 8 runs that Dak had last week that looked like more called design runs. Because as a quarterback, he does not have the physical body that you're going to be able to say, hey, my guy, like they did with Cam Newton at Auburn. They don't even do that with Cam Newton in Carolina. But what they did in Auburn said, my guy is bigger, stronger, faster and more physical than you. You can't play that way. So for me is, what new creative things do they come up off those design runs to try to come up with some type of big play?
I think it's interesting because offensive football, we're living fantasy football. Like the league continues to change the rules to make it, that fantasy football is so popular, say, hey, you might as well, you're playing it, watch it.
Yes.
Here's fantasy football for you guys. So this is what we're doing. The Dallas Cowboys can't get duped into believing they can be that. You understand what you are. Understand who you are. And I think, interestingly,
wasn't that one of the things that made you a great player?
Absolutely. And I played on teams like the teams that I played on, we are what we are. We're going to do what we're going to do. I don't care if you know we're running 18 handoff or 19 handoff. I don't care if you think we're running 19 toss or 18 toss or we're running force or, you know, I don't care. The bottom line is I'm better than you and I'm going to out-execute you because I run 6 plays, and I run them exceptionally well. Now, I'll put some window dressing on those damn things, but this is the 6 plays we run, and we're going to out. That's what Dallas has to do. Here's what we are, and we can out-execute you. There's very few New England Patriots out there in the National Football League that basically take your weakness and say, that's all we're going to do is attack it. Everybody says they do it, and everybody will build a play in. But everybody, for the most part, is going to do what they do.
They fall back to what is easy for them. That's what makes the Patriots special. The Patriots, it's not about what's easy for us. It's about what's hard for you. Whatever's hard for you, that's what we're going to do.
Right.
But there's a reason the Patriots are in a different class as far as success than every other team in the league over the last 2 decades. Most other teams have to almost do the opposite. What are we good at? You just said you guys had six plays that you guys were awesome at. Mm-hmm. Let's just make sure we run those six plays to perfection. For the Dallas Cowboys, what are we good at offensively? Everything involving 21. And not a whole hell of a lot involving four. Let's make sure
4, because four can fake it, give it to 21, or
yes,
keep
that's
it.
Yes, that's the true personality.
He could do that. He could do that.
Sure. And because that also the influence of 21.
Right. And the influence of 21 holds the underneath coverage, mm-hmm. so nobody can get depth.
Yep.
And it opens
that
up that. It mm-hmm. opens up those 12-yard, 12-yard drag routes, 12-yard mm-hmm. In-cutting routes. It opens those things. Those are wide open, and you and I could complete those throws. You could complete those throws. So that's what they're going to have to hang their hat on and say, this is who we are, and we're okay with that. Because you're going to possess the ball, you're going to keep your defense fresh, and let me tell you, that defense will fly around and hit people. And as long as they don't have to play 75 plays, they're going to be in every game.
All right, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's always
much
a pleasure.
Much appreciated. Coming
good
up, can Kirk Cousins lead the Vikings to the top of the NFC North? That's next on
Don't be back over at my office wrecking shop and everything. Put some clothes on over there, too. We're not allowed to.
Sink walking around wearing tank tops in the office.
Chess comes into the room again.
Yes.
All right, game 5 of the NLCS last night. Clayton Kershaw had a dominant performance, striking out 9, allowing 1 run in 7 innings. Yasiel Puig pinch hitting in the 6th to give the Dodgers a 3-1 lead. They would go on to win 5-2. They now lead the series 3-2 as it heads back to Milwaukee for game 6 tomorrow night on FS1.
Puig acting like it's a walk-off.
Was he yelling at the coach or what was he yelling?
He was so excited because they tied the game in the 5th. They then in the 6th, they've got a man on 1st and 2nd. His hit gives them the lead. Now, the guy on 1st ended up getting caught in a rundown, Max Muncy, but Puig didn't care. He was stoked. Kershaw actually goes to the plate in the next inning, draws a walk, scores an insurance run. Kershaw now has 8 postseason starts, 8. 1 run or less, 3 hits or less. No one else in baseball history has more than 5 such starts. So for a guy who the one knock on him is a few bad postseason performances, when he hasn't had those blow-up innings.
Well, we saw one in the first game.
Right, but we've also seen 2 spectacular
gems.
Performances.
Yes.
Yeah. Kershaw, the best pitcher of his generation, maybe the best pitcher of any generation, another great performance last night.
That's how you win 3 Cy Youngs.
And Puig, man, I'm so excited.
All the rookie quarterbacks have had sort of different approaches to the season so far, depending on which organization that has drafted them, between Baker and Sam and Rose and Josh Allen, even Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Which rookie quarterback has impressed you the most so far this young season?
I think there are 2 that have separated themselves from the rest, and it's Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, and I don't think anybody would argue that point. And I really want to be careful because I think we as a society, and especially in our business, we have a tendency to have a recency bias. And last game out, you saw Darnold play pretty well, and you saw Baker Mayfield have his roughest game versus a very good Chargers team. But even with that being said, I think when you look at the body of work, I think Sam Darnold has been the most impressive so far. And it's not because the statistics are better, because he's got 9 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He's got a better completion percentage. He's got a better quarterback rating. To me, I was so concerned about Sam Darnold because of the roster that he was inheriting, because mm-hmm. of the lack of talent out there.
And how would they play? How would they support him?
Absolutely. And he has been able to raise the level of play of the guys around him and actually make this team relevant, which is something I would not have said going into the season. So Sam Darnold, to me, has been the biggest upside surprise of these rookie quarterbacks, because I thought Baker Mayfield was going to be good.
Darnold, we saw his first pass of his career goes pick 6, and then he plays brilliantly the rest of that Monday Night Football game. Next 2 games were tough for him, and he's played really well, I think, since then. And the Jets all of a sudden are surprising 3-3 on the year, a team that is alive in that AFC wildcard battle. Baker's a guy who I think has played better than his numbers say. A 72 passer rating in 2018, that's like a 52 passer rating in 2008. Like, everybody's got a 90-plus passer rating. Mm-hmm. Baker's thrown more picks than touchdowns. I still, when I watch him play, and I watch the Browns a lot, it feels like every quarter he makes a couple elite-level throws, elite plays that make me say, okay, once the game slows down for him a bit, and that's a team that we thought was going to have more firepower on the outside than they did. Like, we go into the year, it's like, okay, so they've got Gordon, yep. Callaway, Jarvis. Now it's really just Jarvis mm-hmm. is a guy you can rely on. Even Jarvis Landry's having a year that he's not happy with at this point. So I haven't been discouraged by Baker, even though the numbers haven't been good. Are you in the same place?
No, I feel very confident with Baker Mayfield moving forward. I think you see some of the intangibles that you can't measure at the combine. You see a guy who's late in the game versus the Ravens can find a way. You okay?
Yes.
Good. All right. Good. You can find a way to make a play against the Ravens and lead a drive down the field. When things are breaking down all around you, you can get outside. The one thing where, and I think you hit on this, and I think you'll see him absolutely improve in this area, we saw one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the history of college football. He was, except until now, Tua, but never threw the ball up for grabs. Didn't have a lot of turnovers. I think you'll get him back to that trend the more comfortable he gets with the system. Mm-hmm. And you have to remember, Darnold has two extra games. With rookies where they've played such a small body of work, that is a lot of reps and
That's
snaps and defenses mm-hmm. that he's seen. Baker will catch up. He'll
Darnold's
get more
had three extra games yeah. as preparing for the starter.
Exactly.
Because in one of Baker's games, he was inserted it right before the half because Tyrod got injured and wasn't playing well. So he's had almost double the time as far as prep. And Baker didn't have a preseason preparing as the starter. Darnold wasn't anointed the starter, but they clearly wanted him to be the starter.
What has surprised you the most with these rookie quarterbacks this season? Negative or positive?
Darnold would be the positive for me because I did not see the Jets being a 500 team now. I thought the AFC East was going to be the worst division in football. Maybe it still is, but I did not see them getting their record up to where they were. But when you ask about all of them, you're getting kind of what you expect. You see some flashes of brilliance, mm-hmm. and then you see some really bad boneheaded plays. And I think you've seen more flashes of brilliance from Darnold and less boneheaded plays, even though there have been, than guys like Rosen and Josh Allen, who now is hurt. And I think the same thing could be said for Baker Mayfield. You've seen bigger upside moments where in more consistently you've seen them. And I think that's why I'm more excited about those two guys than Rosen and Josh Allen. Because I think it's very... I think we have to be careful in saying, hey, this class is the best since the class of 83. This is going to be a, you know, a historic quarterback class. Because of the way that the NFL is played now, it is easier to play the quarterback position than it has ever been. You're seeing the most yards per game in the history of the game. You're seeing the most touchdown passes thrown. The quarterback ratings are off the charts. And I think it's going to take us some time to evaluate that and say, all right, how does this class really stack up to the greatest of all times?
A little quick thing. Haskins at Ohio State. With the quarterback position being easier in the pros, do you come out after your sophomore season?
If your evaluation is up there and your top 10 picks pick what I think it will be, I think you absolutely come out. And I have changed so much in this regard because there's so much money at stake. It has to be a business decision. You've got to look at it and say, all right, this is $25 million guaranteed. Yeah, maybe I could use a little bit of development in college, mm-hmm. yeah. but I should be able to go. And I think the NCAA... Because there's such a groundswell movement to pay the players. I think the simple solution to this is let the players go when they're ready. Like, take the restrictions off. Maybe make it 2 years if you go to a two and done. But let them go as opposed to restricting them every year and they're complaining and they're leaving the season early. You've got to reevaluate when guys can go pro.
All right, Danny. Well, thanks so much for being here today.
He unloaded the whole thing. We'll
there we go.
Awesome. Can't have him for no segment.
I'll bring some new shoes next time, too.
Oh, no. I bet you will.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.